Hey, everybody, welcome to Two Out the First. It's been a little while. It's July 29th, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here. We're going to recap the weekend a little bit, spin it forward into Olympic golf weeks. I guess that we have here is a little bit more than a week in the end, but we got two Olympic golf tournaments to come and a little bit of catch up on kind of other stuff happening with the golf world, with me personally. So thank you for being here again. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here on our live stream or whether you're catching us in the podcast version of the show. So let's kick off by talking about what's actually happening in golf, or what's about to happen in golf, more specifically. The Olympics are here. I don't know if you've been watching them. The ratings have been very good compared to 2021, when I think people kind of felt a little weird watching the Olympics in a time of pandemic, sort of still pandemic with masks and no people. It's a different kind of energy. The Olympics are back this time around. That's great. Really been enjoying them. My favorite events are the swimming. I love swimming. I did admit to watching some dressage the other day. I was very curious if the horse got a medal in the horse person pairing. Turns out they get a ribbon, which sounds very nice for the horse. Watched, what else? A little bit of gymnastics. I feel like as I've gotten older and I've come to appreciate more different people's skill sets, not just my own, better, that some of these talents are incredible. I mean, just incredibly freakish level talents that, yes, very few people in the world have, and relatively few people may do those things. But there's a reason relatively few people do those things and have those talents, because they are either incredibly scary or take a lot of skill or are very difficult to learn. The gymnastics stuff is just unbelievable to me. Synchronized diving, like diving at the same time and like doing even something close to the same thing that's not just a straight up cannonball or a can opener. Mind-boggling stuff to me. Really, really fun to watch. So I've been trying to get my son into it to get him interested in realizing that, hey, like he loves basketball, loves football, loves soccer to a degree, a little bit of baseball, but trying to get him to appreciate other skills that maybe he doesn't get to watch on TV or his phone or whatever on day-to-day. Well, he has not a phone, his iPad day-to-day. And it's been a little bit of a challenge. So I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on getting your kids to watch the Olympics if they're kind of resistant. But anyhow, golf is coming. Golf starts on Thursday. And there's no PGA Tour event this week. So there was the 3M Open that ended on Sunday. We will talk about that. And once that wraps up, this is the event for the week. It is a 60-player tournament this week. There is no Oppo event. There's no DP World Tour event. There's no LIV event. None of those things. It's Thursday to Sunday. And just as a bit of a refresher, the Olympic golf format is 60 players. The cutoff date for that world ranking, basically it's the official world golf rankings of June 18th, excuse me. And that cutoff still had Wyndham Clark in it among the top four Americans. And you're really only allowed two players per country unless you have more than two players in the top 15 of that Olympic ranking. So the OWGR is the cutoff date. And those top four players at that time were Scheffler, Shoffley, Wyndham Clark, and Colin Morikawa. Those are the guys that made the team. Had they had even, another week or so, I think Bryson DeChambeau gets in, is what it is. People can complain about it. I understand complaining about it because Wyndham Clark's not playing very well. I think you would just swap out Wyndham Clark for Bryson DeChambeau and everyone would nod their heads and go, yeah, that's probably the best four we've got right now. And we would go with it just fine. But that's not the way that it is. We've got four players. We're the only country with four players in either competition, by the way. The women do not have four from any country. And that means one of the best players in the world is not part of it. Now, also, Cam Smith's not part of it. He just finished as a runner-up on LIV over the weekend. Should he be in here? Yeah, he'd probably be the best, one of the better players. But also, at the same time, the LIV guys kind of knew the consequences of not earning official world golf ranking points. And the irony is, the men's Olympic golf tournament doles out official world golf ranking points. Now, 60-player field's going to dock it. There's 21 of the world top 50 competing. So, because there's that top two limitation on who can compete in the event based on a country, that creates some problems in trying to get all of the best players to compete. But generally speaking, you're going to get a lot of good players. So this is a no-cut event, 72 holes. Again, runs Thursday through Sunday at Le Golf National that had the 2018 Ryder Cup, which was a house of horrors for the American side in that Ryder Cup. But it was the Mollywood Ryder Cup. So Tommy Fleetwood's part of this. I love him as a chance to win here, or at least to medal. And there, again, no cut, 72 holes. If there are ties for first, second, or third after the 72 holes, they have separate playoffs for each medal. So if there's, I guess if you had a tie for first, second, and third, you could have two playoffs. You could have a playoff to win, and then a playoff for silver, and then the loser would get bronze. You could have a four-person tie for first or a four-person tie for second, and then you could have a playoff for silver and then for bronze, and then you would dole it out that way. So you have to have three medalists. There are no co-medalists. There's none of that in the Olympics. You get three. And if you remember from 2021 in Tokyo, your Olympic champion was Xander Schauffele. The runner-up was Rory Sabatini. The third-place finisher was CT Pan. I think a lot of people were probably, you'd be surprised to look back at the leaderboard of that Olympic golf tournament. 2016, it was the Rio de Janeiro Olympics. The golf course was built by Gil Hanse specifically to host this event, and it was meant to be a public course after. You had Justin Rose who won, then you had Henrik Stenson and Matt Kuchar in there as the medalist. And that kind of felt more like better finishers, right, than Sabatini and Pan. No offense to those guys. But it felt more like a better battery of medalists in that initial Olympics. And that was even with a number of players saying, I don't want to play. I'm not sure I want to be a part of this. All those types of things. And I think in the time since 2016 and in the time especially since the return of golf announced the Olympics has been shared, I think a lot of golfers have come around to the idea of, hey, this is a pretty cool one-off thing. And it's a great opportunity to be able to do something historic. And besides all of that, there are way more people who are watching the Olympics every day than watch professional golf at the four majors. Probably the four majors combined does not match up to the audience of the Olympics. It just doesn't. And that's global. So this is a great opportunity for golf. I know there are people who don't like this idea of having Olympic golf. Golf's not an Olympic sport. Doesn't need to be an Olympics. Why are all the professionals playing? This should be an amateur event. It should be a team event. It should be this. It should be that. And I feel you. I get it. It would be cool to have an amateur event. We have a USAM. We have the AM. We have European AM. We have Latin American. We have all kinds of great amateur tournaments. It would be cool to have that possible for some players to compete, that for their amateurs compete in the Olympic tournament. I don't know how you would do that because of the difference between the OWGR and the WAGR, the World Amateur Golf Ranking, but I would like to see that. I think for me, my critique of Olympic golf is that I wish, one, it was match play. I wish there were a match play component to it in some fashion, whether that's you had more players qualify, you had a qualifying event, and then you had match play. Maybe you took the 60 players and you can have that starting field. I'm cool with that. And then you went to, 16, 8 after two holes or two rounds of qualifying, and then you had round of 8, round of 4 championship match, those types of things. I'd be cool with that. I think that'd be really neat. Have a hybrid tournament, because every week we see 72 holes stroke play, lowest score wins. That is not imaginative, but it is representative of the golf played at the highest level, I suppose. I think we're going to get some kind of team component for 2028 at Riviera, which can't wait for Riviera to host. That's going to be such a cool venue for Olympic golf. It will also be the second consecutive venue that will host Olympic golf that will be a regular tour stop host, like Golf National is for the French Open and was for the Ryder Cup, which is a one-off. And Riviera is a annual PGA Tour host for the Genesis Invitational. So I do kind of like that, and I think Riviera deserves to kind of have that place in that level. It is one of the most special golf courses in this country. It is going to be awesome to have that as the Olympic golf course for Los Angeles in 2028, assuming nothing goes wrong in the world by then, and we still have Olympics and all of those good things. But we've got that to look forward to. Then on the women's side, they pick things up on Wednesday. So medals awarded in the men's competition on Sunday, assuming no weather delays or issues. Then on Wednesday, and that's why they built this in. Then on Wednesday, the women's competition starts. They play 4 days. Same set of things. 60 players, max 4 players from a country if they're all in the top 15. 2 players otherwise. Lowest score wins. All that type of good stuff. All in Lake Golf National. Meanwhile, in the LPGA, and this will be our little transition, they have an event this week, the Portland Classic, Columbia Edgewater Country Club. After the 1 year where they had to get the Oregonian or whatever it was, which was a disaster, and they brought it back to Columbia Edgewater, which has hosted this event for feels like 30 years. It is a tournament that is in a weird place right now because they don't have a title sponsor. They've had like one-off title sponsors here and there, but really the last 5 years, like Amazing Kree, a Korean clothes manufacturer, they were a sponsor for 1 year. In the last couple of years, it's just been the Portland Classic. So there's probably some local sponsorship money that's kind of come together, but nothing enough to pay the title sponsor number. And so that's the way they keep the tournament going. It's at the minimum purse level, kind of like the Dana Open on the LPGA as well in Toledo a couple weeks ago. $1.75 million, kind of the minimum number these days to be an LPGA event. They only have 8 of the world's top 50. Basically, if you're in the Olympics at all, you're not competing in this because you would be going not only across America, but then across the Atlantic to get to France to compete, and players just aren't going to do that. So it's an interesting field, given that you've got like Alison Corpuz, who's the headline player, but then you've got not a dearth of good players, but it's kind of like that Dana Open where a bunch of players who wouldn't otherwise get to play in this kind of 144 player field, they're going to get a crack out of it. Like Natalie Galbis is in the field. She really does not play the LPGA whatsoever anymore, but that's this week on the LPGA. On Sunday, however, one of the coolest moments of the year, I think, for anyone who's kind of very online about golf, and if you're watching me talking about golf on a streaming platform, on your phone or whatever device you're listening to the podcast, you are extremely online, whether you would like to admit that or not, and that's totally great. We love you for it. But you are probably better aware of Lauren Coghlan than a lot of people. Lauren Coghlan broke through on the LPGA Tour yesterday, her first LPGA win in her 101st LPGA Tour start. She broke through by winning the CPKC Women's Open, the Canadian Pacific Kansas City Women's Open. It used to be the CP Women's Open. Then there was a train merger between the Kansas City line and the Canadian Pacific line. So now it's CPKC. This tournament used to be a major championship. Back in the day, when they had four majors, it was the Du Maurier Classic, and Du Maurier was a cigarette company. And once the sponsorship, once that got kicked out of the majors in favor of the then Women's British Open, now the AIG Women's Open, they went back to being just the Canadian Open, and then the CP Women's Open, now the CPKC. But they were out in Calgary, this place called Earl Grey Golf Club, which of course immediately made me think of tea, even though I'm not a tea guy. My wife is, my daughter is. But Lauren Coghlan won an 101st LPGA Tour start, and she got a little bit of help, let's be honest. Heyram Rue had this thing won. She, I believe, was up 4 on the 11th tee box, made a double bogey on that hole, and then bogeyed the final 3 holes into the clubhouse. And it almost looked like she forgot how to play golf for a little while, for that last 30, 45 minutes. Credit to Lauren Coghlan, however. She hit the shots when it counted. She made an incredible birdie on the par 3 17th. Tough, tucked left pin, back left pin. No one was really getting to it all day. She hits it to, I don't know, 7-8 feet, knocks it right in the heart, takes the lead after the bogey from Rue, and then just expertly pars the final hole. Late, leaves it just short of the green. Little knocker up there to 2-3 feet. Heyram Rue would hit it into the stand. She needed a drop. She borderline shanked a chip and then made her bogey, which made it a 3-putt from, what, 3 feet, basically gave her the tournament. She wanted to make it that first putt. She wins by 2, and she wins over Mao Saigo instead of Heyram Rue on 13 under 275. So she is a winner. She earns $390,000 from that $2.6 million purse. Her husband John was there. If you don't know, I can't imagine you don't if you're listening to the show, but they have a relationship with the No Laying Up folks that goes back about 5 years, when Lauren Coghlan was kind of on the fence about continuing her professional career. And they put a little bit of sponsorship money, a little bit of money behind Lauren Coghlan, and she's flourished. I mean, this is her by far her best year on the LPGA. And she nearly won the She had a chance to win the Chevron. She nearly won the Amundi Evian Championship. Now she wins here in what is just short of a major in terms of LPGA relevance and LPGA circles. It is basically a lock that she is going to be on the Solheim Cup team, which is incredible for her. She went to the University of Virginia, and she's a who through and through. And the Solheim Cup is in Virginia, Robert Trent Jones Golf Club in Gainesville, Virginia. And Got to play that a couple weeks ago. Really great shape. It's going to be a course just for her. It is a kind of grinder's course. It is hard to score well. A lot of demanding tee shots. If it's windy, you're going to need to be a high-quality ball striker, which is what she is. She's going to be on that team. She's fifth in the points right now. There's not much time left in qualifying. There's one major left, so she could get leapfrogged by an American player if they do manage to win that major. And they're not already ahead of her. There are four players ahead of her. They've all locked up spots on the team by points that can't be caught. Pretty sure, almost certain, Lauren Coughlin is going to be on the U.S. Solheim Cup team. And that's really cool to get to do that in the state of Virginia. And people will know that. People will know that. People who show up to Solheim Cups are educated golf fans. They know what it's going to mean to her to be able to step on that tee box on the first tee. It's going to be a really cool setting. And to hit that tee shot, it's special. That's cool. Those are the kinds of stories I love seeing in golf. Those are the stories I want to root for time in, time out, of people who have given it their all, who have worked so hard to achieve something, and then they get it. And sometimes there's divine providence, if you believe in such things. Sometimes things just go your way. Sometimes it's your day, and unfortunately it comes at other people's expense, and kind of did here. But, man, that's cool. That's cool. I put a big smile on my face last night as I got switched over from the Olympics to make sure I watched Lauren Coughlin winning. So congratulations to her on the victory. Now, other main events of the week on the PGA Tour. Johnny Vegas is now a four-time PGA Tour winner. He won for the first time in something like 8 years. He won the 3M Open, got it done by a shot at TPC Twin Cities. I was very surprised that the final round was not the same kind of scoring fest that we saw on Saturday. Lots of low scores on Saturday. Vegas shot 63. Matt Kuchar shot 63. Maverick McNeely, who was making the final start with his caddy of 7 years, Travis McAllister. Travis is a good dude. Shout out to him. He's going to have a new bag soon, and I'm looking forward to seeing who he works with next. But the scoring on Saturday was really not there on Sunday, except for one guy, one most notable guy, Max Gracerman, who had kind of started to show signs of playing well. He shot 63 on Sunday, put himself in position to get to 16 under and just wait, see if 8 under 63 was going to be enough to get him a title. It was not. Johnny Vegas wound up shooting 1 under 70 in the final round to win on 17 under, 267, getting that first win since winning back-to-back at the Canadian Open, again, in the middle 2010s. So, well, I guess late 2010s, technically. That's a different kind of win to me than Lauren Coughlin, and I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. I mean, it's something to smile about. He is a guy who has continued to put into work. He said, I believe on Friday or Saturday, that the golf he is capable of playing, he's starting to see it again. And I think any one of us who've played golf for a while understand what that means and how exciting that is, because this game can beat you down so easily, so often it does. You're looking for silver linings. You're looking for the margins of improvement and success, even if they don't always show up and smack you right in the face like a victory does. And he was seeing that, and that's really exciting. And for me, it's particularly exciting to think about, because this has not been my best year of golf. Personally, I haven't played a lot of golf. Our golf club is closed right now for the summer. My one right in my backyard, Argyle Country Club. We're going to Bermuda tees and fairways, keeping our greens ryegrass, and they're wonderful. We're basically growing in a new golf course, and we're not playing it. So I'm not getting to play much, maybe here and there sporadically, but when I do get to play, it's really frustrating because I know what's in there. I know what I can do, but I can't do it right now because I'm just not playing consistently enough. So to see not only Johnny Vegas, but Lauren Coughlin, the people are putting in the work and knew they were near something really good, get to something really good, even better than maybe they imagined. That's really cool. For Johnny Vegas, this means basically in the playoffs, I think he's got to earn a couple of FedEx Cup points. He probably still does have to play the Wyndham Championship, not this week, but next, to make sure he gets in the playoffs, but he's pretty much there. For Matt Kuchar, it's a bit of heartbreak because he's in like the 140 range in the FedEx Cup standings coming into this, into the final round. If he was actually 155 to start the week, had he won, he would have gotten, I believe, to 70 on the number. He is the only player to have made the FedEx Cup playoffs in every single year of his existence going back to 2007. He is now 113th in the points list. There's one event left. He has to move up 40 points, 40 standing points in the standings, 43 to be specific, And that's a big ask. I mean, he basically, by finishing tied for third with Matt McNeely, he moved up 42 places. So he has to finish somewhere near solo third place to be able to get into the playoffs for a 18th consecutive year. That's crazy. I mean, that's a lot to ask of a guy in his late 40s. But it was cool to see him make that run. Congrats to him on making the run. And that gets him easily inside the top 125. So he's going to be good, but he needed those points, all 500 of them on the FedEx end. On the LIV side, and not as many people care about LIV, but hey, we talked about it anyway. John Rahm wound up winning. He won their event at JCB Golf and Country Club, just outside of London. He wound up winning by a shot, and it was really gifted to him after he was giving the tournament to Tyrrell Hatton. On the 17th hole of the tournament, long par 3. Rahm has, what, a 2.5, 3-footer for par. He knows it's going right. He says it's going right, and he just leaves the blade wide open and helps it go more right, misses the putt. You can tell he's angry. He's fuming. He was mad earlier in the week when some of the fans were, like, heckling him in the middle of preparation for a short game shot. There's an automatic thought that anytime Rahm gets mad about something, it's buyer's remorse, that he's mad he went to LIV, and he might be. I mean, he says enough things publicly to make you believe he's probably regretting going to LIV in some fashion. But then to get that win, and then to kind of talk about, because so he makes par in the final hole, just blasts a drive down there, wedges up, makes par. Hatton bogeys the hole, which is unbelievable to me after the guy played so well throughout a lot of this year, but gave the tournament away to his teammate, and they won the team thing. And then he talked about, you know, it's been a really rough year. It's been a tough emotional year, but to get a win is really important. Does that pop the top on what's been a very bad year in the majors for Rahm and helps him at the Olympics this week? I don't know. Does that mean he can go and win the LIV championship and that makes him feel better about it? Also don't know. Kind of don't care. But I think a lot of folks have framed this entire year for Rahm as a lost year, and I think that's fair to say. What I don't know, how much he wishes he weren't in LIV or wishes he were in, thinks he's made the right decision in terms of his competitive self. He's in his prime, right? I mean, this is your prime years if you're a multi-time major champion, John Rahm. And he's talked about how he wishes the schedules were different, how sometimes the format was different, just to give LIV players better chances to be successful in the majors. And all underscoring all of this, you know, the buyer's remorse idea, there's been no more news about what's happening with the PGA Tour and Saudi discussions. And I'm reluctant to speculate because so many things we don't know, right? There's a lot we don't know, way more we don't know than we do. But I'm curious about that delay because while there was reporting, it was probably very much jumping the gun reporting at the U.S. Open, there was going to be a deal announced soon between the Saudi Public Investment Fund and the PGA Tour. There's been no further movement. It's been more than a month. So either that means there were false, fake signals sent, misinterpreted signals, absolutely. But where does that leave things? Does what's happened since? I mean, no one really has talked about LIV. If you look at their social engagement on LIV Golf, their tweets just in particular, the engagement is horrible. I mean, like a random anti-Faldo tweet, if you're very online, gets more likes. And that could be about like SEC baseball than what LIV gets from pretty much anything that they do. And that's not meant to say, oh, well, I should get more engagement. What I mean is, it feels like there's a lack of interest. And maybe that's because their events are overseas right now. And when they come back to Greenbrier in a few weeks, it'll be different. But I don't get that sense. So does that mean with everything that's happening in NEOM right now in Saudi Arabia, they're spending insane amounts of money on a city that doesn't exist and will cost them a quagmire $1 trillion at a minimum. Are they starting to rethink this whole LIV thing? I don't know. I really don't know. But you start to try to piece together pins in the board and you start drawing strings, you can get some crazy conclusions. I don't want to try and draw those, but I think that there's something to consider about those things and what they might all mean stitched together. I don't know about that. All right, that's golf for today. We'll be back with another show tomorrow. We're putting everything together on the TV station. Lots of people ask me about it. We're getting everything loaded up programming library wise, starting to set things up. We're doing quality control checks on live streams like this one. So we'll be able to know that when we're sharing this, not only with you here on X and Facebook and LinkedIn and YouTube, but that also through the TV channel, that it looks good, sounds good, it works right. We can insert commercials. We will do commercials when we start doing this show. Well, it won't be this show. The Breakfast Bowl show will be the one that won't be streaming these services, and that will have its own kind of thing. But also, we will have commercial breaks on that show. And this one, this will be taped for, it will be aired live here, but taped for the TV station later on in the day. So working on all of that, I'll give you an announcement date, all the news around that when it comes out, and very excited to share that. It's so close. It has aged me. It's definitely aged me, but we're almost there. All right, back tomorrow with another show. Talk about some other stuff. Talk about Olympic golf a little bit more. Might talk a little bit about the major season. We'll try to talk about the Portland Classic, whatever other stuff comes up. I want to talk about the U.S. Junior Am too. Scott Kuskowski's kid, Trevor, won as like the 1700th ranked amateur in the world, which is really cool. That tournament continues to amaze. It was one of my favorites. And we've got some other stuff to talk to this week, I'm sure. Email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Balogi. Facebook, YouTube, Ryan Balogi Golf. Golf Newsnet's on all those services that handle Golf Newsnet. And if for whatever reason you want to find me on LinkedIn, find me, just search my name, Ryan Balogi, or Golf Newsnet. You can find me either way. You can follow my updates there. Back again with another show tomorrow. Thanks so much for spending some time with us, whether you watch live, watch after the fact, or listen in some capacity. We'll talk to you next time on Two Off the First. See you later.